Come over here, guys. Come on over here. Cheerios. You okay?
It's been a long day already.
Oh, no.
Come this way, guys. Come on. Keep coming around. Come around. There'll be loads.
Where's Mummy?
Oh. Come on, hurry up! Anybody think you're on holiday? Come on, hurry up!
This is the fellow that was
right,
on
guys,
the telly.
Give your heads up. Internet. I'll run now, but we're not supposed to do a tour in a rain. Don't blame me. Health and safety, litigation from another country. Can't say where. America. You started it. So, if you wouldn't mind, folks, I'd ask you to put your umbrellas down. Or go to the back. One, they can't see behind you. Two, you have somebody's eye out. All right, okay, I'll start then. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome. Very warm welcome for today. It's a warm welcome for you, especially. Welcome to the World Heritage Site, it is Her Majesty's Royal Palace and Fortress, the Tower of London. I'm Yeoman Sergeant Bob Lockley, and I'm one of the 37 Yeoman Warders of the Tower of London. Better known to most of you as a beef eater. Before you ask, yes, I do. Beef eat, children. I'm going to be your guide, weather permitting, for the next 5.5 hours. Together, we walk the tower. I'm going to show you some of our historic old buildings and explain some of our fascinating history. I'll tell you stories of intrigue, murder, and execution. Yeah. Yes, studies have shown most of you are only here for the executions. Very sick. Throughout my tour, I don't mind you taking the odd picture every now and then, and I don't even mind a little bit, and I mean a little bit of filming. But do not film the whole tour! I hate YouTube. Let's get started. Our story begins in the year 1066 when William, Duke of Normandy, better known as William the
Conqueror,
and another name as well. Never mind about that. Yes, he defeated the Anglo-Saxon King Harold II at the Battle of Hastings. He was crowned King William I of England on Christmas Day that year. However, he had to continue fighting the English. They did not take kindly to Norman. That's French. French domination. So he decided to build himself a citadel. So to overawe and oppress the people of London, he chose the area to the east of the city on the site of a Roman fort to build his royal palace and fortress, the very first in the land at that time. We know that building today as the White Tower. It's just beyond this wall over there. Don't bother looking, you can't see it. But over the years, the tower has been used for many things. Now, of course, the crown jewels and royal regalia have been safely secured in here since 1303. This is also the site of the first royal observatory, where the astronomers could study the planets and the stars until we moved down to Greenwich in the 17th century. It's been an armory. It's been a storage of weapons and warlike materials. And all the records of the courts held by the kings and queens of Britain were stored in here until we sent them away to form the public records office in the 19th century. It's also been a royal mint, gold and silver bullion brought in here every day for the design and the production of all the coins of the realm. It's also been a royal menagerie, or a zoo. All the animals and creatures given as gifts to our kings and queens kept here in the Tower of London. Did you know we had the very first elephant in the land right here? Yeah, elephants here. London. Well, however, we didn't know anything about elephants those days. We didn't know what it was for, or what it did. We didn't even know what it ate or drank. Apparently, for food every day, all we fed the elephant on was loaves of bread, raw meat, and buns. And for drink, well, they did say it's a royal beast, so we gave it gallons and gallons of red wine, beer, and pork. And it died. Happy. And we also had a polar bear. We thought we knew more about them. They told us it liked cold water and fish. Our answer to that, for a big kick broke down its neck, threw it in the Thames, help yourself. And that died. That actually. We weren't very good at looking after the animals, but we moved them up to form Regent's Park Zoo, again, the 19th century. And last, but by no means least, this must be one of the most famous prison complexes anywhere in the world. Never built as a prison, but every building you see in this complex had a prisoner in there at some time or other. So now let's discuss some of those prisoners. Before we do, we have any Australians in the crowd? Yeah. Welcome home. Now, most of our executions did not take place inside the Tower of London. They took place outside on Tower Hill, a small plot of land called Trinity Green on Tower Hill. That's where most of our executions took place. First execution up there is in 1381. Simon Sudbury, Archbishop of Canterbury. Now, actually, he was murdered by the peasants because he tried to introduce a poll tax. Where's he gone? Bring back the axe. 7 years later, in 1388, was the first legal execution, and that was another Simon, Simon Burley. And by a strange coincidence, the very last man that's head chopped up there in 1747 was yet another Simon. Simon Fraser, the Lord Lovett. He was an 80-year-old Scottish gentleman who supported the failed Second Jacobite Rebellion led by Bonnie Prince Charlie in 1745. That's not a good place to go if your name is Simon. So on the day of an execution, the prisoner will be taken from here. This is getting worse, isn't it? The unfortunate thing is, guys, if it really rains bad, we can go to the Chapel Royal. Except the tour ahead means we've already got there, so we'll carry on a bit longer. So the prisoner will be taken from here by us, the Yeoman Warders, out towards the ticket office. And there, they once stood a set of gates called the Bulwark Gate. And there we'd hand the prisoner over to the sheriffs of London, who'd take him up to the raised platform or the scaffold site. Now, thousands and thousands of people would gather around up there to witness today's events. No television in those days. No Game Boy, no Xbox, no MTV, nothing like that. But if you wanted a good cheap day out for the family, pack up your sandwiches, get the missus and kids, go up to Tower Hill and see somebody's head get lopped off. Everybody had a great day up there. Well, nearly everybody. So the prisoner would go up the steps, and the very first thing he would do, he'd give a bag of money to the executioner, hopefully to encourage him to do a good, clean job. And then he'd turn to the crowd, and he'd publicly thank the king and the legal system for being so fair. If he didn't, his wife and children went up as well. Oh. I'd have said a few more words, he'd kneel down, say his prayers, and then he'd put his neck on a fine piece of made-to-measure English oak. At the given word or signal, the executioner would bring down his mighty axe, hope he's seven ahead, with a single blow. He'd then bend down, he'd pick up the severed, yet still bleeding head. He'd show it to all the crowd and say, "Behold, the head of a traitor! So die all traitors! God save the king!" And the crowd would cheer! Yay! Or just smile. Why didn't you cheer, madam? You didn't cheer. You smiled at me. And I'm hard to resist, but they are. If you don't take part, it's called treason. We're going to do that thing again. The executioner bent down. He picked up the severed, yet still bleeding head. He showed it to all the crowd and said, "Behold the head of traitors, so die all traitors. God save the king!" Hooray! And then the head. The head would be impaled on the top of a pike, marched down the city of London. That's the London Bridge. At the time, that's the only bridge with access across the Thames. And there be left as example to all would be traitors entering the city of London. Now, before we go any farther, do we have any Americans in the crowd today? Come on, put your hands up. If you're you know you're there. Right. Geography. Geography for you lot. The next bridge to the west. That's that way. About a quarter of a mile upriver. That way. That is London Bridge. The big fancy one near us, the river east. That is Tower Bridge. There's two, okay? London Bridge, Tower Bridge. Have you all got that?
Yes.
I'm only saying because when we sold you one once, you thought you might have that. Meanwhile, back in the scaffold site, the headless body be taken down, put in a handcart, but all the way back down here, be buried in an unmarked grave in the Chapel Royal, and hopefully we'll see that later on. So now, the tree traces the to the headless body, if we could walk. From the scaffold site, come down the hill, through the big wooden gate, the bulwark gate, come down a bit farther, to the entrance of the tower, where once we used to have a tower called the Lion Tower, where we obviously kept...
Lions!
A bit of a clue there, wasn't it? Then you come through the bend, and they come into the first time out of there, which is the middle tower, built in 1280. Next time you came through is the Byron Tower, which is behind you over there. That was also built in 1280. It gets its name from being by the water, by the word. And as we came through, we passed under the first of two remaining drop gates of portcullis. We're now standing in the outer ward of the tavern. That is to say, we're in between the inner and the outer defensive wall. The inner defensive wall is 50 feet high. The outer defensive wall is 28 feet thick. This roadway to my front is what we call Mint Street, because until the year 1812, or thereabouts, this is where all the coins of the realm were designed and produced. In this street, it goes all the way around the town under. The buildings that housed the mints were called casemates, or houses within the wall. And actually, these are still in use to this day as accommodation for some of my yeoman warder colleagues and our families. Did you know, all yeoman warders, we have to live in the Tower of London at all times? Know that?
No.
Some people knew that. There's always somebody else who knew that. Hands up, who knew that? Hands up, who didn't know that? Hands up, who doesn't care? Fair enough. Okay, I understand that then. No, we do, we all live in here. Wives as well, wives, kids, dogs, cats, budgies, goldfish. And we're locked in every night at 10 o'clock.
Oh.
Didn't know that bit, did you?
No.
And that is true. Same way, eh? No. Every night we are locked in the same way for 700 years, the ceremony of the keys, nothing stops the keys. Every night at 10 o'clock, without fail, World War II, IRA, whatever, we're locked in. Every night at 10 o'clock. Every night. On our own. We don't have many friends. But guys, because we're locked in, seriously, we are locked in every night the same way. It's not a joke, we are locked in. We have our own doctor on the inside. That doorway leads to our resident doctor's surgery. There he is in the window at the moment, look. That's him. Yeah, there he goes. That's him, have him. Now behind me is the bell tower. It's the strongest of the 13 towers on the inner wall. It only has a base of about 30 metres deep, 20 feet below the surface, 10 feet above. Only got two rooms of chambers that are not connected by any stairs. Access to the upper room by coming along the Queen's Walkway from the Beecham Tower. Access to the lower room is by coming through from the Queen's House on the other side. Sir Thomas More, the man for all seasons, held in there. Put there in order to King Henry VIII. When he failed to acknowledge the King could also be head of the Church of England. At the same time, and for the same reason, John Fisher, the Bishop of Rochester, was held in the upper chamber. Both these men would have suffered terribly whilst in prison, but they would not abandon their faith. And therefore, upon the orders of the king, both attended up the hill in 1535, and both had their heads chopped off. 400 years later, both these men were canonized as saints in the Roman Catholic faith. Another famous prince they had up there for a little while was a young princess, Elizabeth Tudor, put there in the orders of her half-sister, Queen Mary Tudor, who thought she was part of Sir Thomas Wyatt's rebellion that didn't want her to marry King Philip of Spain. Proved innocent, she was banished to Woodstock, but she came back 4 years later on the eve of her coronation. And that was the last time Queen Elizabeth I stayed in the Tower of London in a reign of almost 45 years. Now, one final prisoner I'd like to tell you about before we move on, who met a rather interesting end, James Scott, the Duke of Monmouth. Now, he was the eldest of 13 illegitimate children of King Charles II. Didn't call him the Merry Monarch for nothing. Upon the death of his father in 1685, this likeable young man, much like myself. He was persuaded to stake a claim to the throne, but in mere fact, if he didn't, his uncle, who's a Roman Catholic, would have done. So, he landed in the West Country of England, and he moved inland, getting popular Protestant support. What became known as the Monmouth or the Pitchfork Rebellion. But the rebellion was crushed at the Battle of Sedgemoor. But he escaped capture. During his absence, he was sentenced to death. They found him 1 week later hiding a ditch and brought him straight to London for his execution. His execution proved to be one of the bloodiest executions in English history. You see, the executioner that day was a giant of a man, apparently. His name was Jack Ketch. Now, in all fairness to Jack, he was only a part-time executioner. Jack Ketch was also a part-time butcher. As well as that, Jack Ketch was also a full-time alcoholic. And on that particular day, Jack decided to try and combine all three skills at the same time. He took 5 attempts to sever the head. The first blow went nowhere near the neck. It actually bounced the axe off the top of his skull. Completely chunk the bone out. He got up, held his head together, told him off. Go back down, had another go. Got the left rib cage. Anyway, he got there eventually, but even then, at the end of it, he had to bend down, take out his butcher's carving knife, move what's left of the head to one side. He carved the remaining bone bristle and sinew to take the head off. And then, strange enough, unlike all those other heads who went to London Bridge, both the body and the head were brought back into the tower, and then the head, it was sewn back on to the body. Too late! He was dead. 24 hours later, he too is buried in an unmarked grave in the Chapel Royal. Some of your faces. But enough about beheading. Let's beheading quickly round the corner.
Oh.
Smart guardsman. Yesterday, weren't you?
Pardon?
Did you come in yesterday?
No.
Why not?
He's doing something else.
Closing, guys, close. Closing, you're making me shout. I'm not used to shouting. Right then, ladies and gentlemen, this is more or less the centre of our ground. So, from here, I'll point out one or two more places of interest you might like to go and visit when my tour is complete in 4.5 hours' time. So, down a couple stone path to your left is the one that leads to the Bloody Tower. Inside there you'll find displays about the two boy princes and Sir Walter Raleigh. Moving right, that large black and white building in the corner, that perfectly preserved Tudor building, that is the Queen's House. Currently, Her Majesty's given permission for the constable to live in there. Now the constable is the Queen's ears and eyes at the Tower of London. He's a 4-star general, and that's Lord Dannett. He's a very nice man actually. But many famous prisoners have been held over there. One famous prisoner to be held on the upper floor for his offensive writing was Mr. William Penn. Whilst he's in there, he wrote a controversial pamphlet, No Cross, No Crown. Well, of course, we didn't chop his head off. Oh, no, not him. We sent him across the Atlantic to one of our smaller colonies. And he founded his own little place called, yes, Pennsylvania, named in honour of his father. Or, as we like to say here, yet another shining example of a criminal from England doing well in the USA. The last state prisoner to be held over there was Rudolf Hess, deputy leader of Nazi Germany, held in there for 3 days in May 1941. The buildings either side, the ones with blue doors, are yet more accommodation for some of my yeoman order colleagues and our families. Moving right again, the tower behind me is the Beauchamp Tower. Inside there you'll find more than 80 inscriptions carved into stone walls by the prisoners. Some of those inscriptions are over 450 years old. Moving right again, the blue door behind me, the one with the light above it, that's the home for our resident doctor and his family. Now, do you remember I told you back at the bell tower we're locked in every night? That's fact. So if we get taken ill through the evening, police, fire, ambulance, doctors, they just can't come in here. We have our own doctor on the inside. You get taken ill, you go and see him in there. If he can't fix you, the man next door to him is a chaplain. He doesn't go far to work. He works in the Chapel Royal or St. Peter ad Vincula. That's where we go next to finish our tour. Over your right shoulder is what we call Waterloo Block. That building stands on the site the Grand Storehouse was burnt down in 1841. That's one of our newer buildings. That only goes back to 1845. It used to house 1,000 soldiers in there, but now that's the home for the Crown Jewels and Royal Regalia. Inside there, ladies, you go in and see the largest cut diamond in the world. 530.2 carats. That's about the size of an egg. It's on the end of the Queen's Mace in display box number one along the moving walkway. You got to be impressed with that. Even I'm impressed with that. Ladies, you're going to want that diamond. But girls, do me a favour. As you go along that moving walkway and go past display box number one, look up at the end of the Queen's Mace, the big, big diamond at the top, and then look at the diamond you might have on your left hand. Compare the two. Look at the size of our great big one. Hey, hey, hey. Look how small and insignificant your diamond really is. You wait till you get to the end of that moving walkway, step off, turn lovingly to your husband, fiance, partner, lover, whoever, and slap him. At the far end of the square is the Museum for the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. That's a British infantry regiment founded here in 1685 and has recently seen action in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now, behind me, this is our village green, known as Tower Green. Most village greens in England have a cricket pitch or a bowling green, but not us. What do we have instead? We have our own private execution site on Tower Green. Not to be confused with the public one I told you about before on Tower Hill. You had to be a really good friend of the king to get your head chopped off there. The first execution on that site is in 1536. Anne Boleyn, second wife of King Henry VIII. Accused of adultery and incest with her brother, she was found guilty and sentenced to death. But Anne had a dreaded fear of the block and axe. So she asked to be executed in the French fashion at that time, which was a double-edged sword that way. We had to send over to France for an expert to come and do the job. So skilled, silent, deadly, and swift was this man. As she knelt down to say her prayers, he quietly leaned behind him and from a bale of hay pulled out his hidden blade, took a firm grip on the handle, and with one swipe took off the head. Then, when he bent down and picked up the severed yet still bleeding head, there was a large gasp from the crowd. A larger one than that! When he noticed, her eyes were still looking around and she was still saying her prayers. That's how quick her head came off. 5 years later, to turn to Margaret Pole, Countess of Salisbury, last Plantagenet princess, and an aunt of King Henry VIII, so she thought she was safe. Unfortunately for her, she's also the mother of the Roman Catholic Cardinal Reginald Pole, who dared to preach from the safety of the continent, as changes being made by King Henry as head of the Church of England. Well, the king couldn't get the cardinal, so he took his 70-year-old mother to the scaffold site instead. Now, she got up there, this game old bird, and said, I'm not kneeling down there. That's for criminals and traitors. I am none of those. The executioner stood there with his axe, thinking, oh, what do I do now? The officer of the guard said, get on with it! He started chasing her around and around the scaffold side of it. He was slicing and hacking any way he could. She finally weakened and fell. He held her down, dragged her across the block, and took off her head. We don't do sympathy in the Tower of London. The following year, the axe fell twice. First on Queen Catherine Howard, the fifth wife of Henry VIII. She was accused of adultery. She famously said in the scaffold site, "Although I die the Queen of England, I would rather die the wife of Thomas Culpepper." Imagine him in a crowd. "No, you stupid cow, shoot him." Too late. Immediately after the return of her lady-in-waiting, Jane Boleyn. She was accused of having known about the affair, but didn't tell the king. This is what's known as a misprisoner treason. Queen's lover, Thomas Culpepper, he was taken down the road to Tyburn. There, he was hanged, drawn and quartered. Altogether, there were 6 executions on that site. You can read about the rest later on. We're now going to rush quickly into the Chapel Royal of St. Peter and Vincula. Before we do, let me remind you, this is still a practicing place of Christian worship, so gentlemen, young boys, if your religion permits you, I want you to remove your headdress as I do. Now, there's no smoking in here, no eating or drinking, no photography or recordings of any sort. And if you've got one of those instruments of the devil, the mobile or the cell phone, switch them off! Now, don't put them on silent, stun, whatever, switch them off. Because if they go off in there, you're gonna die of embarrassment when I throw you out. I will throw you out if your phone goes off in there. I have warned you. I should also tell you there's a small step in the doorway, no bigger than that. It does have a tendency to trip the unwary, mainly the ladies in the crowd. Don't ask me why, it happens every day. But ladies, fear not. Chivalry is not dead at the Tower of London. I'm gonna stand inside the doorway, girls. If you trip over the step, I'll leap across and grab you. Anywhere I can. To save you from hurting yourselves. Gentlemen, you can imagine I'm going to be rather busy this time. If you trip over the step, it really hurts when you hit the floor. Watch out for the step, guys. All right? So, got my right, your right, my colleague Rob. He'll let you in. I'll see you on the inside. So, got to Rob?
All one word. All one word. Out. One word. Out. One word.